Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch number 19. It's May 26th, 2020. I walk into a large white room. It's a dance studio in Midtown Manhattan. I'm wearing a sweatshirt, faded jeans, and Nike cross trainers. The room is lined with 8-foot-high mirrors. There's a boombox in the corner. The floor is clean, virtually spotless, if you don't count the thousands of skid marks and footprints left there by dancers rehearsing. Other than the mirrors, the boombox, the skid marks, and me, the room is empty. In 5 weeks, I'm flying to Los Angeles with a troupe of 6 dancers to perform a dance program for 8 consecutive evenings in front of 1,200 people every night. It's my troupe. I'm the choreographer. I have half the program in hand, a 50-minute ballet for all 6 dancers set to Beethoven's 29th Piano Sonata. I created the piece more than a year ago on many of these same dancers, and I've spent the past few weeks rehearsing it with the company. The other half of the program is a mystery. I don't know what music I'll be using. I don't know which dancers I'll be working with. I have no idea what the costumes will look like, or the lighting, or who will be performing the music. I have no idea of the length of the piece, although it has to be long enough to fill the second half of a full program to give the paying audience its money's worth. The length of the piece will dictate how much rehearsal time I need. This, in turn, means getting on the phone to dancers, scheduling studio time, and getting the ball rolling, all on the premise that something wonderful will come out of what I fashion in the next few weeks in this empty white room. My dancers expect me to deliver because my choreography represents their livelihood. The presenters in Los Angeles expect the same because they've sold a lot of tickets to people with the promise that they'll see something new and interesting from me. The theater owner, without really thinking about it, expects it as well. If I don't show up, his theater will be empty for a week. That's a lot of people, many of whom I've never met, counting on me to be creative. But right now I'm not thinking about any of this. I'm in a room with the obligation to create a major dance piece. The dancers will be here in a few minutes. What are we going to do? To some people, this empty room symbolizes something profound, mysterious, and terrifying. The task of starting with nothing and working your way toward creating something whole and beautiful and satisfying. It's no different for a writer rolling a fresh sheet of paper into his typewriter, or more likely, firing up the blank screen on his computer, or a painter confronting a virginal canvas, a sculptor staring at a raw chunk of stone, a composer at the piano with his fingers hovering just above the keys. Some people find this moment, the moment before creativity begins, so painful they simply cannot deal with it. They get up and walk away from the computer, the canvas, the keyboard. They take a nap, or go shopping, or fix lunch, or do chores around the house. They procrastinate. In its most extreme form, this terror totally paralyzes people. The blank space can be humbling, but I've faced it my whole professional life. It's my job. It's also my calling. Bottom line, filling this empty space constitutes my identity. I'm a dancer and a choreographer. Over the last 35 years, I've created 130 dances and ballets. Some of them are good, some less good. That's an understatement. Some were public humiliations. I've worked with dancers in almost every space and environment you can imagine. I've rehearsed in cow pastures. I've rehearsed in hundreds of studios, some luxurious, in their austerity and expansiveness, others filthy and gritty, with rodents literally racing around the edges of the room. I've spent 8 months on a film set in Prague, choreographing the dances and directing the opera sequences for Miloš Forman's Amadeus. I've staged sequences for horses in New York City's Central Park for the film Hair. I've worked with dancers in the opera houses of London, Paris, Stockholm, Sydney, and Berlin. I've run my own company for 3 decades. I've created and directed a hit show on Broadway. I've worked long enough and produced with sufficient consistency that by now I find not only challenge and trepidation, but peace as well as promise in the empty white room. It has become my home. After so many years, I've learned that being creative is a full-time job with its own daily patterns. That's why writers, for example, like to establish routines for themselves. The most productive ones get started early in the morning when the world is quiet, the phones aren't ringing, and their minds are rested, alert, and not yet polluted by other people's words. They might set a goal for themselves, write 1,500 words, or stay at their desk until noon. But the real secret is that they do this every day. In other words, they are disciplined. Over time, as the daily routines become second nature, discipline morphs into habit. It's the same for any creative individual, whether it's a painter finding his way each morning to the easel, or a medical researcher returning daily to the laboratory. The routine is as much a part of the creative process as the lightning bolt of inspiration, maybe more. And this routine is available to everyone. Creativity is not just for artists. It's for business people looking for a new way to close a sale. It's for engineers trying to solve a problem. It's for parents who want their children to see the world in more than one way. Over the past 4 decades, I've been engaged in one creative pursuit or another every day in both my professional and my personal life. I've thought a great deal about what it means to be creative and how to go about it effectively. How to go about it efficiently. I've also learned from the painful experience of going about it in the worst possible way. I'll tell you about both, and I'll give you exercises that will challenge some of your creative assumptions to make you stretch, get stronger, last longer. After all, you stretch before you jog, you loosen up before you work out, you practice before you play. It's no different for your mind. I will keep stressing the point about creativity being augmented by routine and habit. Get used to it. In these pages, a philosophical tug of war will periodically rear its head. It is the perennial debate, born in the Romantic era, between the beliefs that all creative acts are born of A, some transcendent, inexplicable, Dionysian act of inspiration, a kiss from God on your brow that allows you to give the world the magic flute, or B, hard work. If it isn't obvious already, I come down on the side of hard work. That's why this book is called The Creative Habit. Creativity is a habit, and the best creativity is a result of good work habits. That's it in a nutshell. Towards the beginning, very beginning of Twyla Tharp's The Creative Habit. Wonderful book. I am not as familiar, I'm not remotely familiar with the world of dance and choreography. So this book entered my world just because I think it's revered by a lot of creative people and have talked about it a lot and recommend it. So I grabbed a copy a few years ago, and it's interesting revisiting this one. I love highlighting books in all kinds of different colors, and it's actually super helpful. In this one, I was writing in the margins, like practically section headings and stuff, and it helps me reorient myself in the book, and it helps me remember that I remember it. So that's useful to do more of that, of writing in my books again. One note for this evening, and it is an evening, later in the evening. It's very, very, it's late in the evening. And her point about having a routine, she also talks about, like, space, a place, and some physical stuff that she does with a project. The white room is obviously a really cool metaphor, just this empty blank space, blank screen, blank page, stone. I also, for these, for what it's worth, with these dispatches, I've been doing them at different times of the day. Sometimes I knock them out very early, sometimes over lunch. Probably most often so far, they're at night. And to keep the streak going, I remember to go knock out today's. And what I'd really like to do, and by the way, I'm recording them at different rooms of the house. I'm bouncing all over the place. What I'd really like to do is do them in the same spot, the same time every day, incredibly, incredibly early, Jocko Willink style with his Aftermath Instagram stuff. The guy loves to post photographs of his watch. But it's awesome because it's often at like 4:30 in the morning. And then he'll throw another post in there with like some weights on the floor or something. And it just says Aftermath, like I've already done it. I've hit the weights for the day, and now his day's starting and it's still like super, super early. And so I definitely fully intend to get where I'm knocking these out. But my goal soon is to be posting them so you can listen to them over breakfast or your morning commute or workout. That's my aim. Not yesterday's or the day before catch up. Like I want to deliver fresh every day first thing and then go get into my day. So we'll see how I can do. I'll be going back to this book with y'all. It's great. And, you know, looking forward to what's next. Thanks, y'all. Have a good night.